Blog Hello. Talk Radio.
So we're going to do all the Blog Talk Radio thing, and we're going to skip right over the intro music because this is a special show, and I'm going to make it special by not clogging it up with intro music, although I'm clogging it up with my blabbing, which, you know, what are you going to do? Anyway, welcome back, me. Hey, it's great to be back. I've been on a bit of a hiatus, or I hate us. I don't know. Which was it? Maybe you hate me. No, I took some time off after the holidays, and I'm just now getting back on the air. We're doing a special show tonight based solely on the Shock Pop Show happening in Fort Lauderdale, Florida this weekend. It's going to be an amazing show, a huge show. And I've got the convention promoter, Mark Heller, will be on in just a few minutes to talk about it with me. I will be there pimping Fangoria. My buddy and editor-in-chief of Fangoria, Chris Alexander, will also be there. So, obviously, Fangoria is going to be, you know, out front tooting the gore horn. That sounded gross. I guess that was, you know, that sort of makes sense, though. I'll tell you what, here, Mark is on the line. I'm going to patch him in, and we're going to get started. So, here we go. Mark, are you there?
I'm there, yes. Yes, I am.
All right, I'm going to hang up on you. Have a good night. Now, hey, man, how is it going? Have you pulled out all of your hair, even in your arms and legs at this point from stress, or is everything smooth sailing at this point?
I have a few pieces of hair left. Not much, but I have a few. So.
Oh, a few. Okay. Okay. Like maybe hair between your fingers at this point. That's about it?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Well, I just gave everybody the brief rundown that this is we're doing a special show tonight that's all Shock Pop-centric. We're only going to cover the show tonight. And unless you and I get off topic, which is okay. But I guess let's just start at the beginning, and let's do a rundown of just what you've got happening down there in Fort Lauderdale this weekend. I'm gonna let you take over.
Sure. It's South Florida. It's a different kind of show. They haven't really had anything like this pretty much throughout the state at this point in time. A lot of pop culture shows just kind of focus on all genres but horror, with the exception of the show up in Toronto, and I believe the show in Dallas does that as well. And that's it. And, I mean, obviously San Diego Comic-Con covers new stuff that's coming out because all the movie studios are there. But I was like, you know, I like a little bit of everything. I like cartoons. I like, you know, extreme horror films, like Italian Giallo, but I also like stuff like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and... you never kind of saw all those things kind of combined, so I try to kind of find a balance, and I put a little bit of everything, and it's a show that in every sense is a true pop culture convention because it covers everything.
Cool. Awesome.
Very large guest list, so.
Well, let's hear that. You want to talk about that guest list right now?
Yeah, sure. So from Friday the 13th is the first day of the show, so we wanted to... do a huge presentation for the horror films, and we're doing the first ever Nightmare on Elm Street 2 reunion, which was one of the hardest things I've ever had to assemble. It took me over a year. There was a lot of convention politics behind this event having not happened before, and fortunately, I was able to get this going with very successfully, with very few people not participating in the event. So
right.
We just had the writer, unfortunately, back out. He said he got sick. But other than that, I've only not been able to bring in two people that I wanted. So I think that's pretty good.
I think that's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, it's the first time in 30 years that a show has ever done the reunion. So it's a pretty big deal. Sometimes Mark Patton, when we started, Mark wasn't around for a long time. And then kind of everybody's like, well, the fans are looking for you. And they kind of got a hold of him. Tommy Hudson, who's coming to the show, who did the book Never Sleep Again. He worked on the War Brains documentary with Bill Philippuck, and he did the Crystal Lake Memories, and his name was Jason. He found him for the Never Sleep Again documentary. And then Mark has been doing shows kind of ever since, and reconnecting with the fans. But even if Mark appeared with combination of Robert Russler or Ken Myers, never before did they appear with everyone, including Clue, including Jack Shoulder, the director, and Robert, all of them kind of combined. So this is the first time we're doing that. It's also the 35th anniversary of the original Friday the 13th. This was another one that was difficult to put together, actually, but I got a lot of players involved. We got Sean Cunningham, Ari Reiman, Adrian King. We got Ron Milkey. I was able to get Robbie Morgan to come, which is really exciting because Robbie hasn't been doing shows for a long time. And we got Harry Manfredini.
Very cool.
And then Ari Lehman, who's not only coming for that, is going to be performing live at the end of the night at the show. So anybody who buys tickets, we have a main stage with all the big panels. Ari will be performing. There's 700 seats on the stage. So we have El Rey Network coming, and they're going to be representing a bunch of things. On Friday night, they're going to be representing the From Dusk Till Dawn series, which right now is airing as a television show. I don't know if you've seen the television show or not, but Alvaro Rodriguez, who is Robert Rodriguez's cousin, writes the From Dusk Till Dawn series, and he also wrote Machete.
Okay.
And
cool.
We're bringing in the Demons reunion as well. It's the 30th anniversary. I don't know about you, but I love Demons. I've always loved Demons.
Oh, yeah. Good,
and surprisingly enough, Claudio Simonetti's been in Florida before for Goblin. But Claudio Simonetti even hasn't ever appeared in Florida before in a convention. Coretta Brett has made some appearances, but Bobby Rhodes has never, nor has Sergio Stivaletti or Lamberto Bava, who are all coming. And I'm really excited. I think they've only combined made a handful of appearances. I think the first one might have been one of the old Fangoria conventions when the Fangoria conventions were running around back in L.A. And then just a few appearances and that's been it. I love Italian Horror. I hope this is well received because this is something I want to do in future shows. We also got Sean Greenblatt, who was John Doe in Freddy's Dead. We have Ken Kersinger, who was Jason in Freddy vs. Jason. Britannia Alda, who was in Amityville 2. I have a weak spot for all the Amityville movies. Even as they got like further down and worse, I love them all. Even like the cheesy 3D ones, I'm bad about that. Amityville 2 is kind of a fun movie. It's a little interesting and weird, but I think it's kind of fun. We have a lot of comic book people. We have Drew, who you do a lot of art for, licensed art for, obviously, a reanimator in Friday the 13th. We have Steve Niles and Ben Temple Smith coming, who obviously created 30 Days of Night. And I'm forgetting stuff. Yes, Herschel Gordon Lewis is going to be there.
Speaking of artists, let's not forget about Simon Bisley.
Yes, Simon Bisley. Very excited that I was able to get Simon to come. He's coming all the way from the United Kingdom to join us. And another rare appearance. I don't even think he's ever appeared in Florida before. Also from the UK, we're bringing in William Simpson. William Simpson created the version of Hellblazer that became the Keanu Reeves movie.
Mm-hmm.
So the Constantine Keanu Reeves movie. That's all based off of his run on Hellblazer. He had a huge run on Judge Dredd, but he does all the storyboard and conceptual art for Game of Thrones for HBO.
Nice. Okay. Cool.
So we're going to have this really sweet panel on, and maybe I'll have to have you do the, I am the moderator for that one yet.
okay.
So we're going to have a good panel where he's going to kind of explain about the art of Game of Thrones. He's going to be bringing in some of the storyboards and conceptual art for the show. So that's pretty
cool. That's one of my favorite shows on television. It's an amazing show. I mean, how often do you get really good, deep, rich storytelling, action, fantasy, and lots of naked ladies? You know, I'm just going to call it what it is.
That's a bonus.
you could easily call it something else, but let's all be real about this. I mean, yeah, there's some half-clothed men from time to time, but Game of Thrones really sells the R-rated version of the Playboy or the swimsuit issue of the Sports Illustrated. Let's just be honest. You know, it's a selling point, and people know it. That's like, you know, speaking of that, recently I saw that Netflix is looking to option The Legend of Zelda as a live-action TV show. And it's basically been likened to Game of Thrones, by way of family entertainment. And I was thinking, so basically they're going to take the boobs and blood out of it. That's what I took away
pretty
from
much.
That. Although, you know, I would still watch it, I'll be honest with you. Legend of Zelda, sure, I'll watch that.
Well, you remember
but
the
anyway.
80s, they had the live-action Mario Brothers show. Didn't they have, wasn't, or was it in that, I get my shows mixed up in then. There was also the Captain N show, and they used to have Zelda in the old room.
Yeah, my soul actually died a little bit when you brought that stuff up just now.
Yes, I love that stuff, especially that 80s stuff. Some of it's just, I can't turn myself away. Like watching movies like Hawk the Slayer and Megaforce, I just love bad movies, bad cartoons.
Oh, yeah, I know. I remember playing the Megaforce video game on Atari where your little motorcycle could fly. It was, you know, side scrolling. It was terrible, but at the time it was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was a great 2600 game. Man, I tell you what, if we're not careful, we'll chase rabbits all night and go on tangents. But no, try and pull myself back to this because it's easy to start chasing those rabbits. But how about directors? I understand you've got a really filthy director, a really filthy,
yes.
I mean, just the guy that has just
Saturday,
a filthy world.
We're hosting John Waters. He's going to do a live performance. And the good thing about it is normally, and they sell out at that price, his performances are $100+. It's $70 for the show, but it includes a copy of his book, which he's going to sign, and he does the meet and greet at no additional charge. So it's $30 admission just for Saturday. And then if you pay an additional $70, you get his car sick book, and then you get to meet John, take a picture with him. If you want to bring, you know, Hairspray poster, Pecker poster, Serial Mom, whatever your favorite movie is that he did, Cecil Demented, you bring them, he'll sign it for you, he'll take a picture with you. He's going to spend a long time after the, I think about 2-3 hours at least, after the panel, just signing autographs and meeting the people who go to see a show. We are leaving up some space in the back if there's any overflow. There's a bunch of seats that we set up, okay? And if you just pay admission, you can still go and sit down in the performance. You won't get the meet and greet. You won't get the book and everything, but you'll get everything else. If he has time, he'll try to accommodate the people who didn't get the package, but obviously that's going to be the priority of the people who got the package, so...
When is the performance going on? Is it going on during the show?
It's going on during the show. It's going to be on a Saturday at 1 o'clock till, I believe, 2:15. And then from probably like 2 to 5, he'll do his whole meet and greet.
Oh, man. That's terrible. I'm going to probably have to miss that, you know, having to be there doing other things. That makes me sad inside.
Cassandra Peterson will be there, Elvira.
Mm-hmm.
She'll be appearing as Elvira, doing Elvira photo ops on the same day, not at the same time, though.
Those are getting a few and far between, getting Cassandra Peterson in the building as Elvira. You know, that's something that people need to take advantage of while they can, because it's not going to last forever.
No, and she does more appearances as Cassandra Peterson now than she does as Elvira. So
sure,
it is a special thing to get her out there as Elvira.
Yeah, it really is, and that's something I think that's people need to take that into account, that eventually is going to go away, and eventually is probably going to be sooner than later, you know, as far as,
mm-hmm.
you know, costumed appearances. Now, I see you've also got a Karate Kid thing happening, an excellent reunion. Obviously, Mr. Miyagi won't be there, obviously, but
no.
You know, beyond that, it looks like you've got damn near everybody.
Yeah, no, we got Billy Zabka, we got Martin Cove, and we're really excited to have all of them. And then see Thomas Howell jumped on board. He's like, let's do Outsiders reunion. So we got that going on as well. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. Great film. And it deserves some time for sure. You got what, Naomi Grossman from American Horror Story?
Naomi Grossman
goes on
from
and on.
American Horror Story. The only obviously recurring character, Pepper. She's fantastic.
Uh-huh.
So excited to have her. I not everybody loves it, but I enjoy it, the Freak Show. I don't know if you watch that show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a friend of mine was a recurring character on that one. Yeah, it's I don't know if there's been a bad season of American Horror Story.
No, so. I think, you know, everybody's always going to be critical, but I people always get critical on the internet. I personally enjoyed all of the seasons myself.
You know, I did too, and what was really fascinating is I was talking about this online recently, is I actually grew up in the area where the Phantom Killer murders actually took place, and, you know, the original Town of the Dreaded Sundown film that was based on it that Charles Pierce did. And that movie in itself was horrible, and I'm getting to a point about American Horror Story. That movie in itself was terrible filmmaking. I'm going to call it what it was. And being from the area, I had no particular affinity for the movie because from a cinematic standpoint, it was a terrible movie. And it also was very watered down based on what really happened, blah, blah, blah. They redid the movie recently, and the same director that made the Town of the Dreaded Sundown feature film that came out last year was actually, for that movie to be such a travesty, I thought the Town That Dreaded Sundown reimagining, recreate, you know, whatever they're calling it, because it wasn't a sequel, was awful.
Right. It was kind of
and
like
even from a director,
it was kind of a whole meta thing going on.
Yeah, but it was like you couldn't tell, even though they would tell you this is the year, they put the date on the screen, this is the year that this is happening. But visually, you'd watch it, and you're like, well, what the hell? They've got this from this decade and this from this decade, and these people are dressed like they're coming back from Vietnam, and then what? And the car is just, it just seemed like the way they dressed
it.
The production design was just weird. Anyway.
And it's strange because it was a Blumhouse movie, which they're usually really good production, really good, well-made
movies. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And exactly.
And point being, the director had a lot to do with a lot of episodes of American Horror Story. And for those to be so good, I was just, I guess a good word is flabbergasted at how poorly The Town of Dreaded Sundown translated to the screen under the same direction. So I think, I guess what I'm getting at is illustrate the point that sometimes problems are bigger than the director. I know a lot of people always look immediately, you know, a lot of your cinephiles or your people that are really into film and really think they know this, that, and the other immediately want to point to the director. But I think there are times like this when you see the body of work as a whole and you see that maybe it wasn't all the director's fault. You know, the production company and the producers themselves play a lot of a role into how things eventually come out, especially in editing, too.
Oh, yeah. That's only the second time the movie that Blumhouse did recently went direct to video. Normally the movies go theatrical, and kind of know if a Blumhouse movie isn't going theatrical, something must be wrong. And that whole formula is they make movies for like $2-3 million, just crank them out, and they make $200-300 billion. This one never, I don't think it ever made it into theaters. I don't remember seeing it.
No, I don't believe it did. And I don't think it had any place in the theater, to be honest with you. You know?
Yeah.
It was just a bizarre mishmash. But anyway, my point being, you know, his work on American Horror Story was brilliant, and I think that that has been a really solid show from the beginning. And I think that's just a testament to the fact that, you know, filmmaking isn't just one guy. And I think a lot of times when people want to take a poo on a movie, so to speak, they immediately jump on the director, and a lot of times it's true. You know, a lot of times the director may have more or less pull, depending on the set and the producers and the production company they're working with. So.
Well, it's funny you mention that. I have a really good friend, Albert Payun, very famous kind of mostly B movie director. But interesting story behind a lot of his films were that he oftentimes they had trouble. The studio always kind of had trouble with his vision. And they would always try to water it down or change it or restrain him. He got fired from a bunch of movies. We're screening two director's cuts of his at the show. One is Cyborg, which is really fascinating because I've always, again, loved my cheesy 80s movies. I love the Van Damme martial arts movies of the 80s. And when Albert had first mentioned to me that the movie Cyborg, that people know, was not the movie Cyborg that was shot, I was just flabbergasted. In fact, most of the movie that went to theaters wasn't even directed by Albert. They had to credit him, obviously, for, you know, all the legal reasons with the film, the Screen Actors Guild, whatever that is. But it was a completely different score, completely different story. Everything was completely different. We're going to be showing that on Sunday, along with his director's cut of Captain America, which is the 1990 Captain America.
The rubber ear Captain America. Yes.
Yes, the rubber ear Captain America and Red Skull, mostly not Red Sage because they only had so much budget, but you know, he nearly did Spider-Man too. But Spider-Man and Masters of the Universe 2 kind of got amalgamated into what Cyborg was. That was just kind of how canon went back then. But it's interesting because Cyborg, the unedited, the complete vision and version that Albert created, is an amazing movie. And when you see this, you start to wonder about some of his other movies. You know, what would have happened if the studio had been completely restricted? How many other directors out there had this amazing vision that because there's producers involved and because there's studios involved and people financing the movie, you know, this person didn't like this because it upset them and they have money, so they get to tell the director, you know, you can't put this in the movie, and then that gets changed. It's interesting.
Yeah, it can become a mess. Speaking of Spider-Man, you know, the announcement came that Spider-Man is coming back home, basically. You know, there's word around the campfire of all the different actors that are being tested. But, you know, I think at this point that's all word around the campfire because with this being such an infinite
stage. I think it's a little bit of a shame that Andrew Garfield's out because I hate reboot, start, reboot again. But I feel like
leaving him in the suit forces a lot of people's minds to accept that the movies he was in, the films he was in, are canon, and I don't think they should be because this last Spider-Man, he was amazing as Spider-Man, as Peter Parker. The film
the movie
he was in,
flawed.
The movie was awful. It was just awful. Mm-hmm. It was just, I'll say it again just in case anybody missed it. It was just awful.
It kind of reminded me of the Batman and Robin fiasco where they just kind of started with Michael Keaton back in 1989 and then just fell off the rails and became something else entirely.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And I think there was a chance for Spider-Man to be something, but I think the best thing for them to do is to try and rebuild the Marvel Universe into the cinematic Marvel Universe so they can tell these stories because, you know, politics and business is, you know, messing up that opportunity. I think even X-Men would make, although they're doing really well, and yeah, I think Bryan Singer has come back and for the most part fixed as much as he could that they'd made a mess of in the X-Men universe. I mean, there were some things he, you know, had to leave alone, like how Professor X survived and things like that, but for the most part, he was able to fix everything with the new film, and it's doing well, it's making money, but I really believe that there would be a lot more money to be made if they could bring it all back together.
Oh, they could have X-Men and Avengers, and they got the Infinity War. I mean, and then instead of Fantastic Four, they now have Inhumans. Instead of the X-Men, they now have Guardians of the Galaxy, which is basically what happened there. And it's unfortunate because it's like, I mean, imagine an Avengers and X-Men movie, just insane.
Oh, I know. And now I'll be honest with you, the new Fantastic Four film, I've seen the trailer, and I still will not see the film. I refuse.
No, I was not impressed.
I will not watch the movie.
Upset about the casting of the Human Torch. I mean, they do that stuff all the time. That's what it is. It didn't feel like a Fantastic Four movie to me. It kind of reminded me of the Halle Berry Catwoman movie where they called it Catwoman, but she wasn't Catwoman. And I kind of get the
sense. Well, see, I think that's all stunt casting. I do have a problem with that, and it's not a race thing. It's stunt casting. It's just like I think Halle Berry is Catwoman. I mean, it was a different Catwoman. That's one thing. But the whole the way they cast the Human Torch, I just really feel like that's stunt casting, and I don't think it does justice to bringing in an African-American, nor does it do justice to a character, because in my opinion, all you're doing is stirring the pot for sensationalism instead of, like, they are bringing the Black Panther in. You know, they've brought in Falcon. And now, granted, those are more secondary characters. And I just feel like there's options here, like, especially over in the DC universe. Like, well, Hal Jordan was the original Green Lantern. He's very important. So Guy Gardner. But John Stewart, I mean, there's a perfectly good, strong African-American lead. They've got a new Green Lantern that they could use. I mean, there's all these opportunities. It's just sort of like if you go back to the Spawn film, I think using, was it D.B. Sweeney? Or who was it? D.B.?
Yeah.
D.B. whatever. Yeah. I think casting him as Al Simmons' best friend, that really took me out of it because, you know, I think his name was Terry in the comics. I don't know. Just I don't like it either way. It's not about, you know, black only you know, casting a black guy as a white guy or anything like that. It's just I don't understand the reasoning. Just like in Man of Steel, why was Jimmy Olsen suddenly Jenny Olsen?
Or, yeah, that was a little weird.
And then I think they tried to explain that away eventually because I feel like now by the same token, I don't think Perry White could have been played any better than Lawrence Fishburne played him. Yeah, I will. You know, I mean, there are times. It's
so
just like Michael Clark Duncan's Kingpin was not a bad Kingpin in Daredevil. I just still feel like sometimes I feel like it's stunt casting. Michael Clark Duncan really worked. I think Lawrence Fishburne really worked. But I think this whole Human Torch thing, I really feel like that was stunt casting. That's just me.
Yeah. But, I mean, making Dr. Doom a cyber hacker and stuff like that and all the other goofy stuff, too, it's,
Yeah, I'd love to see. It's sort of like when DC, and this really bothered me for a whole other reason. When DC did this new 52 reboot, they took one of their characters and decided that he was going to be gay, the original Green Lantern.
Right.
I had a really big issue with that. But before everybody starts getting their pitchforks, let me explain. They are doing something great as far as bringing a gay character to the forefront. My problem was instead of changing what was, why not build something that matters now? Because let's be honest, that particular Green Lantern character was really a throwaway character anyway. And so by doing what they did, I think, again, was basically sensationalism and using something to generate interest in a character and using the gay community as an excuse to energize a dead character, whereas they could have built a new character and really stood behind it and done something big. That's my opinion. Because I think that those characters do have a place, but I think basically taking a dead homogenized character and just swapping it over to something new and fresh to get attention just seemed like a shit move. I think they should have created a new character and got behind it, gave that character its own book, whether it was male or female, and done something with it.
I mean, they could do that from time to time. They had a Muslim Green Lantern.
Yeah, they've done that, and I think that was what I was saying. That was the other. I couldn't remember what it was, but I think it is. You're right. It's a Muslim Green Lantern, and they've done that with Batwoman or Batgirl, the newer one.
Yeah.
But I just thought the Green Lantern was a bit of a sensational slight, in my opinion. You know, it's just, I don't know, let's take a shit character and try and make it something by basically hopping on what I think was a bandwagon. They should have just built a new character. I don't know. It's hard to talk about that stuff and not sound like an asshole, but it's just like, in my opinion, I think it was not a good
character
to run with.
About the characters, and you kind of want both equal parts, respect paid to the character, that you support it, other fans support it, and then the same thing, you want whatever happens with that character to be authentic, and sometimes some stuff just comes off as forced and unauthentic. And
right, exactly.
And it bothers me.
Yeah, it at some point, like with films, there's this point where, like with The Man of Steel, I mean, many more changes to the lore and the characters, and they could have just saved the trouble of licensing Superman and just created their own mythology. You know, it's and I just think the stunt casting can get out of hand. I mean, what if they were to redo Star Wars or, let's say, the Superman mythos and make Power Girl a man or make Han Solo a woman? Well, why? You know, but they do. I mean, it's almost what it seems like they do sometimes, and it just seems insane. Just create something new and make it matter instead of taking something that's old and broken and try to make it matter.
Yeah. It's,
so there you go. There's my opinion because it doesn't really matter. So let's get back to this amazing show. Let's get back to the show. So you've got some amazing X-Men things happening. Speaking of funny books.
We have Boo Boo Stewart and Daniel Cudmore, who are Warpath and Colossus, most recently in the last X-Men film, are going to be there. We have Scott Waddell, who is an absolutely legendary X-Men writer. I mean, one of the people who... when you sit there and think to yourself, who has just an absolutely phenomenal one on X-Men, Alan Bell comes to mind. We have Louis Bertaccio, who created Bishop.
He's the guy that really, after Chris Claremont, really put a handprint on the X-Men.
Oh, yeah. And his version of X-Men is so unique. It's so, I mean, you could still go back and read that stuff, and it's still so fresh. And his art is so much a part of it. It's just such a dynamic and unique style that just never really seen before. I mean, he started with the Punisher, and that was really good looking stuff. Man, he got onto Uncanny X-Men. That stuff was just incredible.
Oh, yeah, it was brilliant. It was brilliant. Let's see. Now you've got.
I
was just scrolling across the website.
Mike Deodato. Been most popular on his runs with Spider-Man and Avengers. He's been around for decades. And Batman. I've known Mike.
My thing with him was always Thor. I loved his Thor run.
Yes, Thor was great. I loved his Wonder Woman as well. Although a lot of his runs,
that was a good run.
Artemis, not Wonder Woman. But it was. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really powerful run. That was William Messner Loeb's, who also did the Captain America with Rob Liefeld. We have a. Just kind of going down the list real quick. I'm trying to make sure I don't forget A's either and stuff here. We have Man of Action Studios, which I love. They created the character.
Right, those are the guys behind Ben 10 and so many other things. You know, great television. Great, you know, a lot of great cartoon work there.
Well, they're also involved in the Ultimate Spider-Man on Disney XD and the Avengers, which also we have an animator, Stephen Gordon, who's coming for our Fire and Ice reunion, which I'll touch on in a second. But Stephen Gordon has been around for a long time. He's worked on Black Cauldron. He's worked on Lord of the Rings, the animated movie with Al Fashi. He animated the Hollywood scenes in Cool World, which I love. Cool World. That's a fun movie.
Oh, great.
He did all kinds of things. If you go back in the 80s, he did Gummy Bears, even, believe it or not.
Really?
He did, he's done Voltron. He's done Dino Riders, which was a big toy line back in the 80s.
I remember Dino
Riders.
There
was a 3D cartoon called Star Chaser, which he worked on as well. And this guy's worked on tons of stuff. He's very well known. He was the animator on Wolverine and the X-Men also, and X-Men Evolution.
Okay.
So he's also another X-Men artist, or known very well as an X-Men artist through the show. But he's there as a huge part of it. He's there with Jerry Conway. And Jerry Conway wrote Fire and Ice. He wrote some of the Spider-Man animated series, My Little Pony, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Centurions. Remember Centurions? That was a fun toy line.
I do remember that. I hadn't thought about that one in forever.
Cool
toys. Wow, yeah.
Well, Hal Rail, who's coming, was a voice actor. He did tons of voice acting for, like, 80s cartoons and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember Visionaries?
Yeah, I think I had all
those. They're kind of like G.I. Joe with big hologram poles that I loved.
Yeah, and the holograms on their chest. They were, like, different animals and stuff. Yeah. Yeah, I think I had all those. Every figure.
He was one of the backup Raphael briefly when the original voice actor for Raphael stepped away for a short bit. This guy's been on everything. He's been in Transformers, G.I. Joe, Darkwing Duck. He was on Sonic the Hedgehog. He's been in a little bit of everything. And,
wow,
most people don't realize, but Jeff Darrow has a background in animation as well. He's not just a phenomenal artist of comics, but he worked on Super Friends.
I didn't know that.
Back in the 80s. And Darwin Cook is another guy who has both comics and animation. Lisa Hammer, who was on the Venture Brothers. She was Tiana Orpheus. I don't know if you watched the Venture Brothers. It's a fun...
I haven't watched all of them, but I have watched a handful of episodes. It definitely has its own weird sense of humor, and I'm always a fan of anything Patrick Warburton does.
Yeah. But the big thing with this animation, which I'm really excited about, is Fire and Ice. This is one of those movies that I just loved for years and years. I don't know if you've actually watched Fire and Ice or not.
Oh, yeah, I'm a huge Frazetta fan.
So I put together this big reunion. Unfortunately, Ralph wasn't able to make it down, but Ralph is Skyping in. And
great,
we have Steve Gordon, who was the primary animator with him. Sean Hannan and Stephen Lindell were both Necron. I don't know if you know or not, but that was rotoscope animation, which I love rotoscope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know that was rotoscope.
Now, Lord of the Rings.
Well, at the time, I mean,
well.
you can tell if you watch those old films which ones are and which ones are not, just on, based on the fluidity of the movement of the characters. And it really, I know there's two sides of what people think about rotoscoping, but I think it does add a neat dimension to the Wright films.
And I love when you actually get to see pictures. Like, I've seen on Ralph's Facebook page, like, the actual live-action picture from The Lord of the Rings, and it's just so neat to look at the people, because, I mean, these things are completely acted out and everything. And, you know, Sean Hannan played the role of Necron, but Stephen Mandel was the voice of Necron, and Matthew Roswell was the voice of Tigra, and she's going to be there. But, unfortunately, obviously, Frank Frazetta is no longer with us, but his daughter and granddaughter will be coming to the show. Frazetta girl.
That's wonderful.
And,
it's
going to be really fun. I think that this is as far as conventions are concerned, I think it's way too overlooked. Unfortunately, I could find more people to be a part of this at the time. It's just a lot of these people are kind of completely out of the scene. But, like, Sean Hammond is still very active, works on the Smurf movies, does other animation. Stephen Mandel does video game and other voice work and acting work. And he was on a Canadian cop show in the 80s that I used to watch. I think it was called Mikey.
Okay.
When you look at him now, he looks completely different. He had a full beard and a full head of hair. But it was one of those procedural cop shows from back in the 80s. And I don't know. That's another thing I've always, for whatever reason, been really fascinated with. But I'm also excited that Samantha Newark's coming. She was Gem in the Holograms. Gem in the Holograms. So, even though it's a girl's cartoon, I'm aware of all that stuff. And I was always fascinated by all the animations from back in the 80s. But, I'm a big 80s animation. I thought, like, Saturday morning cartoons back in the 80s were just
Yeah,
huge.
There was nothing better than getting up and, you know, sitting in your jammies eating a bowl of, you know, Fruity Pebbles or Cookie Crisp, just waiting for the next cartoon. That was my childhood. I mean, you know,
oh,
and then
no,
running home from school after school for G.I. Joe and Transformers. You know, I remember when those two miniseries first ran after school and they did, like, the Mass Device, you know, G.I. Joe, the first five episodes. And, you know, and then they did the first five episodes of Transformers and they were doing those, like, self-contained week-long stories. And, you know, and that how suddenly Saturday morning, you know, bled into, you know, Monday through Friday after school or before school. So it was great. Yeah, I missed that time.
Yeah, and getting back to them running around in circles here in the comics, we have a really solid comics list. Just want to give a couple shout-outs and stuff to some people.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Balke, phenomenally talented colorist. We have Tommy Castillo. I don't know if you're familiar with him at all. Did George Romero's Totec comic. He's worked on Evil Ernie. He's a very great illustrator. Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor, who most recently were known for their work on Harlequin. But Jimmy's also working with the Saska sisters right now on a Painkiller Jane movie.
And Amanda had a great run on Power Girl.
Oh, phenomenal. I love it.
Yeah.
It's the humor and the writing in that book was great, too. It's just
you had always reminded me of the Justice League International, you know, sort of that same tone.
Yeah.
And she has such a good fluidity of emotions and postures to really she can sell the joke or the gag with a look or a mannerism on a static, non-moving image. And it harkens back to JOI, and I always have really been impressed by that ability because, in my opinion, JOI was always the best run in the history of comics.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that she emulates so much of that has always been a lot of fun. Oh, and Darwin Cook's going to be there.
Yeah, Darwin Cook.
I was looking
Darwin
at the list here. Yeah, it's he's got an amazing.
Standing
alone, you've got an amazing comic show here. You know, just a comic show alone
this
will be amazing.
A lot of these shows kind of get off the rails, and they get all the celebrities. They kind of forget to take care of the comics part, too. What we try to do is also just have this amazing, stellar, just unbelievable comic list. I mean, you know, Jerry Conway created The Punisher. He created Firestorm. He's been writing iconic stuff for years. He worked on the Conan films with Arnold Schwarzenegger. He did Fire and Ice. He did all the animation
with Dracula.
Stuff.
He's been around forever and doing brilliant stuff.
Another person forever that I love is Jose Delbo, another one.
Mm-hmm.
He did the Beatles comics back in the day, very well known for his Transformers and Wonder Woman stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Coley Hamner's coming. Coley's been great. He's another one that does great kind of comedic stuff as well in certain instances. But he did Red, which became the two Bruce Willis films.
Right. And he did some work with the Jon Stewart Green Lantern, right?
Yes, he did Mosaic.
Was it Mosaic?
Mosaic, yeah.
Yeah. That was basically Jon Stewart's book. Yeah.
Yes.
We
have some newer artists, too, that are kind of coming up on the scene. Megan Attrick, who is doing bodies for Vertigo, and she did the Joker's Daughter. Kyle Higgins, which is a great writer. He had a huge run on Nightwing. He has an independent book called Cowl.
Yeah.
We're
getting tight on time, so let's make sure everybody knows where to get more information on the web and where the show is and all that.
All that out of the way, I don't want to waste all the time here and stuff.
Because we got about 2.5 minutes left. We had a little bit of a short show, so let's make sure everybody gets what they need to know here.
All right, well, first of all, Corey Feldman is appearing just on Friday night. Van Margera is appearing just on Sunday. We've got kind of special stuff every day. We've got 4,000 square feet of video games, arcades. We have the Arcade and Pinball Expo are going to be at the show. We're going to have pinball machines in the show. We have a huge vendor that's coming with full of cult movie vinyl. He's got the Friday 13th vinyl and everything. This crazy, insane vendor area. You name it, they've got it. I mean, we've got an amazing assortment of stuff. We have people that are going to be slabbing. Heroes Haven Comics, they're going to be doing CGC slabbing. So if you pick up books or get stuff signed, we'll seal it for you right there, and it's all certified. We have a Geek Fest. We have Infusion. Get tattoos by amazing, talented artists. We have Popcorn Night. We're doing an advanced screening of Wolf Cop with the actor making his U.S. debut at the show.
Awesome.
We're doing Electric Boogaloo, which is a Canon documentary. 25th anniversary screening of Frank and Hooker with Patty Mullen. American Guinea Pig. Sneak preview of Hunters. We're doing a Return to Newcomb High with Babette Bombshell. We're going to show I Spill Your Guts with James Balsamo. I mentioned the Albert Bayun screenings already. Tons of screenings, tons of activities. If you did nothing but just paid admission, it's $30 a day except Sunday, which is $25. And then the weekend is $60. If you just did nothing but come in and just like play video games and go to movies and stuff at the show, there's more than $30 of programming right there.
Awesome. And everybody can find everything they need to know at shockpopcomiccon.com, right?
Yes.
Shockpopcomiccon.com. Man, it's the 13th or the 15th. 13th through the 15th in Fort Lauderdale. Yep.
Fort Lauderdale, Florida at the Broward Convention Center.
Awesome. Mark, thanks so much for coming on. I had a good time. We need to do this again after the show, too.
Absolutely.
just shoot the shit, as it was. I will see you guys this
weekend.
Yes. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Be sure to go to Fangoria.com and check out what we're up to there, BrianStewart.com. And, of course, I will see you at Shock Pop, and be sure to go to ShockPopComicCon.com. Good night.